Welcome back to Radicalize Me, the show where we learn how to fight the power and seek justice in an unjust world. Today, my guest is the rapper and activist Awkward. That's Awk as in awkward and word as in the written word. He's a champion of the 10 for Justice campaign, a list of 10 demands designed to move the U.S. toward police abolition and community empowerment. I'm sure you've seen various lists of demands like this floating around, but this one's great because it not only gives you a list of 10 things that should happen, it's an actual step-by-step guide to defunding police. We get into the details of the list on the show, but what I want you to do, either as you listen or after, is go to 10forjustice.com, T-E-N-F-O-R, justice.com, read the list, familiarize yourself a little bit, and join Awkward in sending it to as many congresspeople and senators as you can. Your own reps and senators are most important, but do more if you can. His goal is to get this in front of everyone in Congress, and that's something you can take part in right now. You can find Awkward's music at awkward.bandcamp.com and his writing at herald.news. I'm recording this early Monday, August 3rd, 2020. The news is as dumb as ever. In the past week, Trump has threatened to delay the election and ban TikTok, both of which he has backed down on, I believe. It's always the same pattern with this guy. Drunk off Diet Cokes, tweeting away, threatens some dumbass shit. When he realizes it's not a feasible plan, he's like, it's called a joke. Ever heard of it? The extra unemployment has expired. So please look up your local mutual aid fund or any of the ones around the U.S. if you're able to donate or if you're going to need their help. Congress extended the eviction moratorium through September, I believe, but with the extra help going away, it's going to be even more of a fucking disaster when we get to that point. There's really no plan in this country, so we're going to have to do it ourselves. One more thing before we get to my interview with Awkward. I have a new EP out called Rageonomics, R-A-G-E-O-nomics, featuring 4 new original protest songs to give you moral support on your activist path. Right. It's a little punk, a little folk punk. It's a fully quarantine project. I started in March, finished in July, so there you go. It's a good time, and you can find it now on Apple Music, Spotify, SoundCloud, and Bandcamp. If you use a music service other than those 4, you might find it there, but it's under the wrong artist. CD Baby did an oopsie and listed my DIY punk album under Joe Messina, a 92-year-old former Motown guitarist, also known as the White Brother with Soul. So as you can imagine, that's really of no benefit to either of us. I'll link to the 4 active ones in the description, and if you want to stick around for a couple minutes after the show, you'll hear one of the songs, all right? How about that? And with all that out of the way, let's get to my interview with Awkward. All right, so I have with me Awkward, should I call you Awkward or Awk or do you,
well, Awkward's the full name. You can call me anything you like.
Cool. So you are a rapper, activist, public speaker. Anything I'm missing?
I do all kinds of stuff. Yeah. I'm a dad. Cool. You just saw me dealing with the crisis. I think probably as it relates to things we might be talking about, I do a lot of digital strategy, and I'm also a journalist.
Oh, cool. So do you write for like any independent publications or like?
I've written for a ton over the years. Combination of, you know, news stories, culture stories, like hip hop related stuff. But currently most of the time I'm writing for a new, online publication called Herald News. It's okay. Herald.news. It was started by a friend of mine, fellow Jewish rapper, named Y-Love. And, we're just like getting off the ground, but I'm the editor. Although at this time I essentially do all the writing as well.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's cool. Yeah. So it's looks like it's very activism focused.
Well, I don't know what Why Love intended, but when he put me in charge, it became what it became. Yeah. Of a mouthpiece of, you know, the people that I want to amplify. So, right. Yeah, I mean, certainly we agree on the core value, and that is, you know, diversity of voices, unity of belief, you know, and then we're targeting, you know, people probably my age and younger. You know, maybe not, I guess generation. I'm actually like the oldest millennial you could be.
Okay, yeah.
But we're targeting people a little bit older than myself, I guess, right. Too. But what we really want to do is tell stories that might either not be told in traditional media, or even if they are, not told well and not, you know, given the right perspective. So, you know, for example, the story of Ramsey Orta, who filmed the murder of Eric Garner and then was persecuted by the state of New York and New York Police Department. You know, when he was released from prison finally, the way that Rolling Stone wrote the article was incredibly one-sided. They basically didn't talk about what he went through or, you know, how he ended up in the position he was in. They talked about like his criminal activity, essentially, you know, most of which he was set up for. And, you know, then said he was out. So whereas we, you know, alternatively, did an interview with We Cop Watch, which is an organization that he works with now, focusing on, you know, what he experienced that led him to essentially have his camera on him at all times.
Yeah.
Because of constant stop and frisk, and then the unbelievable, you know, treatment that he received once he, you know, put that video out there. I mean, they tried to kill him, literally.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. But yeah, that's great. I mean, it's a bonus to, I didn't know about Herald News. It's great to be able to, direct listeners to alternative news sources because, I think, yeah, I've heard more than once from people like, hey, I get the problems with MSNBC or whatever, but I don't know what the alternative is. It's like, well, they are out there.
Yeah. And the same goes for anyone who is looking for a platform. You know, I've been so focused on, 10 for Justice, and, you know, raising whatever money I could so that we could distribute flyers for that. But also more often than not focused on raising funds, you know, for individuals who have been victims of police brutality and things like that. So, you know, we haven't put a lot of time into raising funds for Herald News. As a result, we don't have a lot of money to pay writers, which is a common problem for news media today in general. Even the big name ones, you know, they're constantly laying people off. But, you know, we do offer a platform, and anyone who wants to expand their reach beyond their medium, for example, certainly should, you know, reach out to me. We're looking for more writers than just me, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, yeah, so you mentioned 10 for Justice, and that was originally when you reached out to me. You asked about coming on to talk about that. So I looked at the list, and, you know, it's some of it's stuff I've heard before, but I don't know too much about this particular, like, push. So if you want to explain that bit.
Yeah, so I'm definitely trying to do a press run. I want to get the word out in as many different ways as possible. As I mentioned, we are distributing flyers to people on the grounds. A fellow journalist and social justice activist, Chuck Modi, just posted on Twitter a video that he took of an activist, I think in D.C., holding one of our flyers and speaking about, you know, what it means. So that's a really positive sign that the flyers are getting out there. We're also going to be emailing every single congressperson on the state and federal level. This isn't just kind of for fun. This is a, you know, desperate need and something that we are going to put in the hands of decision makers because, you know, we want to see action taken. I think, as you said, some of these, you know, the goals of 10 demands or 10 demands for justice are, you know, you may have seen other elsewhere. Some are possibly more unique to our coalition. But I think, you know, I as an individual and we as a group support any effort for abolition of police and prisons. And we support efforts to defund police departments as well that are picking up steam across the country. One way to look at 10 demands is that it goes beyond that. We consider defunding to be kind of the framework, the basis, step one. So it's not enough to just cut $100 billion or $1 billion or, you know, whatever it is from a police department. We spend trillions across the country on militarizing cops who target criminalized communities based on race and class. And it's part of a much larger system that, you know, actually profits off of the incarceration of certain communities. So we want to take that ton, you know, that huge amount of money that is all of a sudden available by defunding police departments and actually reallocate those funds to communities. And we envision a different society, not based on these played out concepts of crime and punishment, of criminalized communities, criminalized poverty, things like that, but one around education and wellness checks, intervention, free healthcare that includes mental illness, that includes addiction services, you know, and then when it comes to addressing crime that, you know, may still occur even in a, you know, utopian society, we have other methods that have been proven to not only be effective in other countries, but be what actual victims of crimes are looking for. You know, often people who are perpetrating crimes are victims themselves, and we want and envision a society where we're, you know, taking care of our own communities, building our own communities, using mutual aid and mediation and reparative justice and rehabilitation, and using peacekeepers to address issues, not poorly trained cops who have no concept of de-escalation, have been empowered and given access to military grade weaponry who, you know, storm people's houses and just start shooting and killing.
It all makes sense to me. It's definitely so I've seen, I don't know if it's like other versions of this list or like or if it was this list itself in various places, but is this like who came up with this? Is this like, is this your project? Is it a collaboration? Or
it is definitely a collaboration. In late May, I was approached by someone who, you know, was looking at kind of consolidating lists of demands that she was seeing issued by different organizations, you know, predominantly and appropriately by, you know, Black-led organizations. And so, you know, I have a decades long history of fighting for racial and social and criminal justice and, you know, with a focus on homelessness and prisons and policing. So, you know, I jumped at the idea myself. And over time, as, you know, the group kind of organically grew, you know, to a point of about a dozen people at one point, you know, certain people left for various reasons, including that original person who was unwilling to kind of go the full length that we believe is essential. You know, we believe that reform has been tried and it doesn't work. And we're not going to solve these massive systemic problems by, you know, proposing things that centrist Democrats are already proposing. We want to put their feet to the fire and push it. So, you know, we kind of worked from late May, hours and hours and hours iterating this, and June 25th we released it, and we've continued to kind of make minor edits here and there as we continue to receive feedback from different communities. What took us so long is, you know, we really wanted to be detailed and comprehensive and all-inclusive, and we wanted to include actionable steps. We didn't want to just come up with, you know, a proposal to abolish police or to abolish prisons and just leave it at that. We have concrete steps that many, you know, many of the demands include specific mandates that could be implemented right now, you know, including freeing political prisoners, you know, essentially tons of people who have been illegally arrested for, you know, exercising their constitutional right to protest, ending cash bail, as 7 out of 10 people in this country, the thousands or hundreds of thousands of people in jail, 7 out of 10 have not ever been convicted of a crime. You know, there are a ton of things that we include that would take us on the road to full abolition. And as we kind of envision, you know, taking these steps and beginning the defunding, we can start to build this alternative society that would be able to manage within a healthy, safe, positive manner, a post-abolition network or continuum of services and, you know, network of communities. So, you know, we've been working, as I said, for now at this point, almost 2 months, and we're like in the next phase where we're beginning to try to really push the demands out there, get them in the hands of the right people, which is kind of like I've taken a big part of the lead on. Meanwhile, there are other members of the group who are already beginning the next sets of demands. So as a coalition, we kind of formed during the creation of 10 for Justice, but as a group, we call ourselves 10 Demands, and some of these other members are creating 10 Demands for healthcare, 10 Demands for education, and so on, as we see all of these intersecting systems requiring massive overhauls and being directly related to each other. If you take education, for example, our schools are militarized. So part of 10 for Justice is demilitarizing schools. But in 10 for Education, obviously, we're going to go a lot deeper into, you know, that section of our society.
Right. Yeah. And it seems like a good approach, too, because, looking over the list, it does look like it's not just a list of 10 things that should happen, but it's like a 10-step process.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, they don't necessarily have to go in order. You know, defunding the police and demilitarizing the police go hand in hand. You know, those should happen at the exact same time. You know, meanwhile, as long as we have police, you know, we have to implement steps 3 and 4, which is eliminating the discriminatory processes in policing, prosecution, and sentencing. And meanwhile, we need to do something that's clearly long been needed, which is demand and implement transparency and accountability. So when a specific cop does, murder or terrorize someone or, sells drugs or, breaks another law, does anything corrupt, we need to know that. And then we need to hold them accountable. And, you know, that leads us to step five with independent investigations of these police crimes and abuses of power. So we, you know, we don't want to implement or introduce other forms of carceral punishment because we're looking to abolish that entire system. So instead, right. you know, we want to make sure there's, you know, a database of police crimes that, you know, all data, all body and dash cam footage, everything that is available to us is made available or available in the general sense of the word is made available to us. And then having an independent, you know, national review board with community level oversight, you know, prioritizing membership amongst those most impacted communities, we can, for the first time ever, hold these police and these departments responsible. Which doesn't mean sending them to prison. We don't want to add more people to the, you know, totally bloated prison population. Mm-hmm. They need to be fired. You know, their pensions and their liability insurance should be what is used for the legal fund for the victims. And then departments that are harboring these criminals, you know, these departments need to be dismantled, you know, right away. Mm-hmm. So those that violate civil rights, those would be the first ones that are abolished. And, you know, these are concrete steps toward abolishing them all.
Right. Yeah, and I think when it comes to holding police accountable, like individuals who are police officers accountable, what is that sort of alternative to putting them through the justice system and imprisoning them? What does that actually look like?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just so we're, you know, for a kind of context, you know, people often ask us, like, what about the rapists and murderers? Right. You know, there's a lot that people don't understand. For one thing, just among the spouses who have been brave enough to come forward, more than 40% of police officers beat their wives or partners. One third of stranger murders in this country are committed by cops.
Yeah.
So just by getting rid of them, meaning taking them off the streets, you know, we would solve a lot of the issues everyone's so terrified of. But at the same time, like I said, we don't want to use the same systems of oppression, you know, and to deal with them. So the same would go, like, as a leftist, I want to hold, you know, corporations and, you know, CEOs and stock traders who, you know, trade on secrets and do manipulative things, put out products that kill people. Like, I want to hold all those people responsible too. Mm-hmm. But again, it's you either are for abolition or you're not. So we would deal with them in the exact same way. You know, instead of a criminal justice system, you know, where there's, you know, it based on how much money you have a certain level of protection based on who you are, or who, you know, you get sentenced differently. No matter what, if you get sent to prison, you're not being, you know, there's no penitence, there's no rehabilitation, you are criminalized from that point forward.
Yeah.
And in the case of, you know, people of color and the vast majority of, you know, people being there for nonviolent crimes and things related to drugs, you know, it's not serving the, you know, the purpose of bettering those people or bettering the communities that those people came from. It's designed to remove these criminalized segments of society and profit off of them through slave labor and, you know, all the things they need to eat, to wear, et cetera. You know, corporations profit off of private and public prisons. So as it relates to anybody who commits a crime, we would use the same system that we're looking to develop, which would involve reparations, which would involve, instead of deeming this person evil, they would be held responsible as a human being, someone who owes, you know, as a human, you know, they owe the
debt to the society.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Right. The debt to the person that they have harmed.
Yeah.
And as I said, you know, research has showed that even victims are looking for that kind of, you know, real reparative justice.
Right. Yeah, right. It's, you know, I'm sure for some people it's like, yeah, it was satisfying to see that guy get the, you know, lethal injection. But yeah, I would think that people who are experiencing that much pain and anguish don't want to just create more of that.
Yeah. That would, and as we said, like most people who commit crimes, you know, most people who are perpetrators have also been victims. Yeah. You know, people come from unhealthy, unsafe communities, you know, and that was not their fault. Right. They may have done something that, you know, breaks a law. In most cases, you know, when you look at it, everyone has broken a law at some point. So what this really is about is not lawbreakers. You know, the reality is that the, you know, group of, like, we've all committed a crime. So the category of lawbreakers is way larger than the percentage of those who end up in a place for lawbreakers. You know, so it becomes really clear when you look at the numbers, you know, which people are policed, which people are imprisoned. So, you know, that's the first step as far as I'm concerned, is, you know, is acknowledging, you know, the racist and classist history of prison and policing in this country. And, you know, the next being the profit motive. And once you understand that and understand, you know, that there is a way to think outside of the prison box, that it doesn't have to be that way, then we can, right. And also that it isn't working. You know, that's the other thing. Right. Like, not only is, for example, you mentioned injecting someone, like the death penalty is not only inhumane, it's considered a violation of human rights. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, we're one of the only, you know, developed nations that still uses it. It is also discriminately applied, no shocker there. Yeah. It costs more money to execute someone than to keep them in prison for life. And it doesn't deter crime.
Right.
Prison doesn't deter crime either. So if you're all, if these people who are arguing against this concept are really looking to end crime, we need to end the, you know, the situations that create crime in the first place.
Right. Yeah. Which and I feel like people have said that for years, you know, politicians right. have said that for years, like, we need to address the root cause, but yeah. also be tough on crime because it's right. this immediate safety thing. And really, they're not doing the first one. So.
Right. And also, like, you know, again, most crimes, like, are not committed by strangers. Like, the you know, the media is incredibly powerful, the mainstream media, you know, at a time when crime and murder are, you know, have gone down, like, to significant levels,
yeah.
the, you know, the media has increased their coverage of these crimes. So people don't understand the reality of the situation because most people don't do in-depth research. They just see the news every night. And if every story is about rape, murder, and kidnapping, you're going to believe that that is what's actually happening.
Right.
But, you know, in reality, adding more cops to the street is doing the opposite of ending crime or making us safer. Research right. has also shown that, you know, no matter what a person's prior criminal activity may or may not have been, being stopped by police actually predicts an increase in future criminal behavior.
Right.
So having people patrolling and, you know, like essentially like terrorizing a neighborhood just makes people more paranoid. It doesn't make them feel safer. Those same neighborhoods don't call the police when they have problems.
Right.
So, you know, instead we should have people doing wellness checks. We should have peacekeepers who are actually trained to de-escalate situations. That's mm-hmm. how in the interim, as we're trying to improve our neighborhoods and, you know, improving education, jobs, drug and mental health treatment, you know, things like that, we should be replacing as many cops as possible with people who are actually in a position to help and not make things worse.
Right. Yeah, there's a couple of these memes going around about, you know, the original meme is, you know, from some right wing source, and it says, I'd love to see the police a social worker handle this guy who's mm-hmm. running around naked and throwing bricks or something. It's like, and all the social workers comment like, oh yeah, no, we do that all the time and manage not to kill them. Yep. So that's
literally exactly the person that they know how to handle.
Right.
The cops will literally, you know, the cops will just shoot that person, even though the person next to them, who may have even been the ones who, out of fear, called the cops, are saying, don't shoot him. He has mental illness. That's not what he needs.
Right.
You know, like, you know, and someone who is able to de-escalate doesn't even necessarily have to be, you know, an MSW or, you know, or something like that. There are people who are trained to talk people in emergency situations down. And
right.
the ones who ruin those negotiations are the cops.
Right. Yeah. And I've even seen clips of cops doing that. Like, you know, now and then you find a cop that can do that. But yeah, you don't want to rely on like that nice cop showing up.
Right. Of course it would be, just from a logical perspective, wrong to make a statement about, like, as it would be about anything. There's, you know, words like every and always don't really have a place in a world inhabited by humans. So sure, I'm sure there are police officers who not only went into it for the right reason, but do everything in their power to do the right thing continually, and who may also be trained in things that they were not trained in at the police academy.
Right.
But the whole concept of like just a few bad apples is pure nonsense. Mm-hmm. In addition to the stats I mentioned about the, you know, cops murdering people, and in addition to, you know, the cops beating their wives, there's also the reality that even the cops who go into it for the right reasons very quickly learn that they're part of a really powerful gang and they have no control over what happens. So even if they may not be actively going out and beating up black people, they're afraid to report the ones that are, and they're also given quotas. So there are all these crimes, there are all these actions in this country that are considered crimes just to make money off of. There are tons of crimes in this country that are strictly crimes because their people are poor. You know, like anything related to the sex trade or homelessness, public space, for example, you know, that stuff should be decriminalized. You know, things like immigration, people are criminals just for being here. Criminalized survivors, people, typically women who have finally fought back against their abuser, they're in prison as the criminals, not the people that they fought back against.
Right.
So, you know, we could drastically reduce the prison population overnight, you know, by eliminating a lot of these things from like this set of criminalized behaviors and criminalized people.
Yeah. Yeah. I got so mad a couple days ago. My wife and I found a video on YouTube about these like abandoned subway tunnels in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And because we live in Boston now, and it was like, yeah, these were like the original subway tunnels or whatever, and they just built new ones at some point. And they were saying like, the police will find homeless people down here and shoo them out or whatever. I'm like, why? Just build fucking like underground houses for them. Like, this space has to sit here unoccupied.
Yeah.
It's really really ridiculous.
And it is, and the same thing happens, you know, it's happening in Philadelphia, you know, with housing that was abandoned, and and actually, you know, even people who are like, the amount of people who could end up being homeless over the next couple weeks, like tens of millions. Yeah. Because, you know, of COVID and this depression or recession we're in, and the total, you know, complacency of our leadership, you know, giving corporate bailouts instead of giving human beings who are losing their jobs, money, you know, right. with the unemployment rate skyrocketing and the refusal to, you know, cancel debt and cancel rent or even put a moratorium on it. You know, there are tons of people who just simply haven't, like majority of people who haven't paid since March. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're going to be homeless. They're going to get kicked out of their apartments and be homeless. And now they're all criminals because they're homeless. And once you're homeless, if you don't have a job, you can't find one because you don't have an address. You know, it's just this endless cycle that happens. And, you know, whereas these people who are living, you know, some of them who are living in otherwise abandoned buildings or who can't pay their rent, you know, we're not making our lives, we're not making it safer for all of the wonderful people who can afford it. Like, we're just making everything worse. Yeah. And we're doing this to ourselves by criminalizing poverty, you know?
Yeah.
It would be great if Boston could, like, make sure they had electricity, like, make sure it was safe and clean. But the other thing they could do also is just leave them alone.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I wrote a 120-page thesis on homelessness a few years ago. And, you know, for one thing, like, women with children is the fastest growing percent, like the fastest growing homeless population.
Yeah.
Like, that says it all. Like, it's not the crazy, you know, like Vietnam vet that everyone envisions. Although, you know, tons of veterans are homeless and that's a whole other problem. But, you know, if like, people, what happens is they're told you can go to jail or you can go to this shelter. Neither one is safe. Shelters are incredibly dangerous. Really? And like women and children are abused. Things are stolen from them. Not to mention that like with COVID, it's significantly more dangerous to their immediate health.
Yeah.
So forcing them to leave a place that for them is safe because we don't want to look at it. Clearly, we're not trying to address the underlying problems. It's like, we just wanted this beautiful society for those of us who are privileged. And if you're not, you're, you know, we don't give a shit about you.
Right. Yeah. So I want to get back to the list and what you said about so you're going to be emailing everyone in Congress. So is that going to be like one email to everyone from 10 for Justice? Or is this something that like people could join in on and like get those numbers up?
Oh, I mean, we haven't even like gotten into that stage yet. I mean, that is definitely a better idea. Like at the very least, and you know, I am, you know, I'm not just gonna like add, like collect, you know, I'm not just gonna take a list and put it into MailChimp or something and send it off. Like I definitely want each of these individuals to be held responsible for doing the right thing. So I want them all to receive individual emails from real people that has their name in it. So at the very least, like I'm going to send however many freaking emails that is, so that they see it and they hear it. But you make a great point that is like a common strategy. You know, we tried to apply that, for Temujin Kensu, who's been wrongfully incarcerated in Michigan for 3 decades, you know, trying to get as many people to also send this email. You know, people do that for politicians. Like, I don't know if we have the infrastructure to do that, like through a bot or an app, like some, you know, we're really careful about like how we raise money and what we use it for. However, I would absolutely love to get any help I could get, as would everyone else in the group. You know, like, I don't think we need necessarily help like collecting the email addresses. Like there are people who are doing that. But certainly the more times your representatives see this email, the more seriously they're going to take it. You know, it's one thing to get it from 10 Demands and be like, all right, this is a radical group and toss it, you know, but it's another thing if, you know, hundreds of their constituents send the exact same thing and say, I endorse this, I support this, this is going to make the community you supposedly represent safer and healthier. You know, that would be really powerful. So yes, I would love to do that. I'm sure everyone else in the group would love to do that. So I think it's really a matter of, you know, taking a template and trying to get it out there. You know, I think it would probably be, you know, I would recommend anyone who's not that familiar with what we're doing to go to 10forjustice.com. It's T-E-N-F-O-R justice.com, and just checking out, you know, what the demands entail, or how it works section on like this, how we can actually see this implemented. It's not as far-fetched as some may believe. And the better society we envision. There's tons of resources on abolition to learn more about, you know, the context and the people who've been doing this for decades, you know, predominantly really incredible Black women feminists. And then I would say that, you know, we have a share page. Right now you can download our flyer and distribute it any way you like. You can download images to share on social media. And I think that would really be a good place to add our templates, so that, you know, when we're ready to do it, you know, people can just go there, download the template, and add their name and their congressperson's name and send it themselves. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. That's something I've been thinking about more recently is if people can get together and overwhelm the inboxes and the phone lines of some of these people. I think that's... you know, one way to get attention when it's not super safe to be out still.
Yeah. And I think we need it all. You know, I think we should not abandon the electoral process, especially, you know, whereas at the federal, you know, the presidential level, we have two pretty unfortunate choices. but at, you know, the state and local levels, you know, there is real opportunity to elect, you know, grassroots leaders, like true social justice warriors, people who not only understand how politics work, but actually care more about people than profit. And, you know, they can start implementing some of these changes at their levels. I also think it's really important to stay out there protesting, because the fear that they have right now is the only thing I really think that will influence the true power holders to implement real substantive change. If they're terrified of an all-out revolution and having their houses taken over, then they're going to try to appease us, you know. Yeah. And the harder we push, the better the appeasement will be. The closer it'll be to what our demands are, the closer we'll be to true justice and equality in this country, you know. And then there's the organizations like mine, and there's a ton of others that, you know, are trying to lay the groundwork to kind of inform protesters and the politicians.
So do you want to kind of, you've probably said a lot of it, but do you want to just go through the list so that people kind of know what those items are?
Yeah, so the first one, as we said, is to defund the police, but go way beyond what is being asked most commonly now. We want this to begin immediately. That includes rejecting any proposed expansion and implementing the highest cuts every year. You know, part of this is we believe right away that we should be abolishing police unions. They are not workers' unions. They exist to protect criminal cops. So we then also want to take that money that we have all of a sudden have available to us and reallocate those resources to impacted communities. Number two is demilitarizing the police. A lot of the money that is given to the police is used to militarize them. And then in addition to all the funding that is part of these state budgets and city budgets, there are tons of contracts and grants and loopholes and police foundations that enable these departments to further militarize themselves beyond even what would be available just in the budget. I mean, having tanks and grenade launchers is simply not necessary. And, you know, these, again, are things that we want to see happen right away on the road to full abolition. Number three is eliminate discriminatory policing, prosecution, and sentencing. You know, big part of that is race, but that's the biggest part. Another part of it is class. There are things we can do right now, like ending broken windows policing, stop and frisk, racial profiling, repeat offender policing, gang policing, neighborhood policing, you know, by decriminalizing poverty, like repealing laws related to the street economy, like sex work and drug trades, or the occupation of public space, like panhandling or public urination. You know, we can completely, like drastically reduce our prison populations, make it far less necessary for police to be out there. And in reality, these things should not be criminalized in the first place. So they right. should not be criminal. The police should not be policing these types of activities. As part of this, we also want to like end fines and fees associated with the court process. It's just another way to make money off of criminalizing certain communities. That includes ticketing and obviously cash bail, and parole and probation fees and things like that. Number four is instituting complete law enforcement transparency and accountability. That includes, you know, this national database of tracking police crimes and misconduct. It includes an independent community-led review and audit process, public disclosure of all police records and schedules, and holding any officer accountable who manipulates data, covers their badge, or illegally stops a citizen from filming. Mm-hmm. Number five is independently investigate all police crimes and abuses of power. You know, that is holding police accountable, not through, you know, kind of empowering further this carceral system. But certainly, you know, if you look at what happened to Breonna Taylor, 3 out of the 4 cops are still working. That's yeah. insane. Yeah. Any cop who has committed any type of crime should be, you know, immediately terminated. You know, and that officer should participate in a pre-established program of reparative justice. Yeah. You know, and also like all the costs of police-related lawsuits should not be covered by the state. So more money goes into that and less into social services. It should not be covered by the people who feel the need to sue an officer who has ruined their lives. It should be covered by their pensions and liability insurance. And we also believe that if there's a department not holding their officers accountable, that should be the first department that is absolved completely. On number six, you know, instead of police patrols and massive prison budgets and over imprisonment, mass incarceration, and also instead of community policing, which has also proven not to work, we don't want to think of policing at all. That whole concept needs to be thrown out the window. You know, we want independent community councils, you know, where we're prioritizing inclusion of marginalized groups for needs assessment, decision making, and oversight, and then investing in these communities to, you know, create safety measures, as well as measures for reparative justice. Number seven is a big issue right now that affects not only, you know, the Black community, but the whole community of allies. What is going on in Portland is an extreme example that I've been saying for a while and has now been proven to be true, that, you know, these other forces that are coming in to beat, murder, and disappear people for, you know, exercising their constitutional right to protest, this is now going to be happening across the country. So it was bad enough when it was just the cops beating protesters and putting them in jail. It's getting a lot worse. And so we demand an immediate end to all strategic counter-protest activity and the freeing and expunging of all convictions of all protesters who are in jail or prison. Number eight, and this definitely distinguishes us from some other you know, collections of demands, you know, based on feedback from the Black community and the Indigenous community. We want to see a public apology for not only police violence and racial discrimination and policing, prosecution, and sentencing, but also for generations of slavery and everything that has occurred, that occurred to create slavery, and everything that has happened since. All African descendants of slaves in this country, you know, deserve economic, social, and political parity, and deserve reparations to make that happen. The same goes for, you know, all descendants of indigenous peoples in this country. The First Nations were here first, hence the name. They were raped, murdered, stolen from, and now live in, you know, in many cases, you know, less than stellar environments that were created by white Europeans who came here. They deserve reparations as well. Number nine, end the war on drugs. This is a huge part of where mass incarceration became a thing. We can thank Joe Biden and many others for that. Right away, and at the very least, we need to legalize marijuana. And not only legalize it, but make sure that it's not corporations and already privileged people who are profiting off of marijuana, but ensuring that the communities most impacted by the war on drugs are given the opportunity to, you know, own marijuana-related businesses. We also want, as a part of that, to expunge all nonviolent drug-related convictions. And in lieu of arrest, from now on, provide what they actually need. Mental health, behavioral health, addiction recovery services. You know, it's not fair that if you're rich, you can go to Betty Ford, but if you're poor, you get locked up for your life. And number 10 is, you know, very all-inclusive end to this system of carceral punishment. We believe that we can free a tremendous percentage of the prison and jail population right now. We need to close all jails, which are essentially just there to house people who can't afford bail. And we should free everyone in jails, prisons, youth facilities, detention centers, who are elderly, disabled, or immunocompromised, nonviolent offenders, undocumented immigrants, criminalized survivors, and those held on bail or for parole violations. Ending things like the three strikes law, ending the school to prison pipeline. Instead of criminalizing black and brown children from the moment they're born, we need to repeal truancy laws, make school a safe place to learn and provide proper education, removing police and surveillance technologies, and eliminating school zero tolerance disciplinary policies that target the same people who are targeted when they're adults. I mean, one in three black boys who are born today will end up in prison, and that's insanity. In addition to that, we are demanding the immediate abolition of ICE. We're also demanding an end to new prison construction, an end to all pre-trial detention, and an end to the prison industrial complex. All private prisons should be closed, and all contracts with private companies that profit off of prisons should be immediately ended. We believe it's possible to implement a reparative justice model in place of the current system. We believe it would be a lot more effective as well. So those who are tough on crime, this is the way to do it.
It's a great list, and I wanted to just put all of it out there. But yeah, anyone can go read about the details on the website. Yeah.
Believe it or not, there's a lot more to it than even what I said. And I think it's also really important to get, you know, deeper into the site to learn, you know, you can answer a lot of your own questions right here. And through all of these great resources created by people far better than me, you can learn more about where this concept derived and what it really means.
So I was wondering if you have looked to any other countries that have more of a reparative justice system. Because I know I've read a little about like Norway and Finland that stand out, but is there anything else?
You know, I personally have not done enough. I believe that other members of my group have probably done a better job. There are some differences, though, and there, you know, for one, you know, their history is different. Their demographic makeup is different. You know, we have half of this country, you know, are Nazis. I mean, it's going to be hard for us to just follow exactly what another country that might just be way more homogeneous than us, you know, has implemented. But I do believe there is a lot that can be learned. I think, you know, not only demilitarizing, but de-arming the police and getting the guns out of the hands of everyone in this country would go really far in ending violent crime. Yeah. Because a lot of times it just happens because people lose their cool momentarily. And cops are great at that, but so are regular people. Yeah. You know, I also believe that as long as cops and Nazis have guns, I need to have the right to have them.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, that's something that should happen. In an ideal world, none of us would need them. None of us would have them. You know, in all these countries, like I said, I think there's a ton to be gleaned. But at the same time, you know, we want to abolish prisons completely. And while their prisons are, Norway, for example, Scandinavia in general, their prisons are certainly more humane, their intention, you know, how they are used for rehabilitation more so is also positive. You know, the way people are policed is a lot better. They have way more social services. They have free health care. They have equal education. These are all things I would want to implement, but I am not willing to create another version of a carceral society. So right. I want to find an alternative to handling people who break crimes, and more importantly than that, like how to provide reparative justice to the victims of those crimes. I want to make things that have no victims not be crimes, you know? Yeah. So yeah, it's a great question. I don't know enough to really comment in great detail. But I know that I can't fully support implementing an alternative that still includes carceral punishment.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, yeah, I was also wondering about your music, too. Are you putting anything out these days? Or?
Yeah, on a related note, you know, I do a lot less music now than I did when that was, like, my core focus.
Yeah.
In addition to being a father of two and, as we talked about in the beginning, doing digital strategy and you know, and journalism and working on things like these 10 demands and other activist projects. You know, I helped sue the state of New York to get Bernie back on the ballot.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
I certainly have a passion for music that will never end. And, you know, when certain things come up, they inspire me to make music that I see as kind of you know, a soundtrack to the moment or a soundtrack to the cause.
Yeah.
And on that note, my next song will be coming out hopefully in a couple weeks, my first in a while. It's called actually 10 Demands. And it was produced by another really cool artist, Jesse Jett. He's also singing the hook. And this song will kind of serve as a follow-up to a song I wrote and video I put out back in 2014 with the New York Civil Liberties Union and Occupy the Hood. That song was called Throw Away the Key and focused on mass incarceration and police brutality. This will focus on the alternatives to that. So I'm going to, you know, in musical hip hop fashion, I'm going to go through these 10 demands and why we need them and how we can implement them. You know, with the intention of, you know, informing people in a new way that can be a little maybe more enjoyable than reading a list, listening to a song that, you know, is catchy and repeatable and could be used at the same protests that, you know, people are bringing our flyers to.
Yeah. Awesome. So was there, am I forgetting something? Well, I think that's it, unless you have, anything else you wanted to share?
No, we're always looking for people to get behind us. You know, just to say you support is very meaningful for us. But also, you know, we're looking for volunteers. We have a vetting process to protect the integrity of the group and its members. But there are lots of ways to get involved, whether it's graphic design or, you know, more administrative stuff or distributing flyers, you know, whatever it may be, if you're interested, there's a contact information on 10forjustice.com. And the organization's Twitter and Instagram account is 10 Demands. So feel free to strike up a conversation. We're open to discussion and debate. We believe that, you know, the more people understand this, the more they'll appreciate and value what kind of change it could mean for everybody. But we understand there's still a lot of confusion out there. So we're happy to help answer any questions you may have.
Awesome. Yeah. And actually, that was my other question is, what sort of brought you to all this? Did you grow up in a diverse place where you saw a lot of this firsthand, or did you come to it later, or what?
Interesting. Yeah. You know, my whole family is from New York City, a very diverse place.
Oh, mine too.
I, on the other hand, grew up in a really conservative, really Christian, really white neighborhood in Connecticut. And what kind of set it all off for me was experiencing significant and dangerous anti-Semitism. Wow. And being an angry kid who went around like looking for other kids with Confederate flags to beat up. And it didn't take me long to notice that the very few people of color, kids with physical or psychological disabilities, people who were LGBTQ, were treated even worse than I was as a Jew. So I, from a really young age, also being raised by an activist mother, had a real connection to all oppressed peoples.
Yeah.
And that kind of is what, you know, led me to hip hop. It's what led me to my activism, along, you know, kind of figuring out a way to translate what I was, you know, the injustice that I was so angry about into positive, proactive, you know, strategies for improving the lives of, you know, the disfranchised. So I've been doing this since I was a kid, yeah. Thanks to my mom and thanks to some pretty bad experiences.
Yeah. Wow. If you don't mind saying, where'd you grow up in Connecticut?
In Fairfield County.
Dude, my family's also from New York, but when I was 8, we moved to Westport.
Oh, okay. Yeah, pretty close. Although I feel like Westport is even it's like a city-ish, right? Like small.
It's a pretty big town. Yeah, it's a little too small to be a city, but big for a town. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean Fairfield County, you obviously know. Then it's changed a bit from what I understand, as more and more you know, rich city people have moved there and commute. So it's not exactly, you know, an equal and diverse community still. But what I experienced was just a combination of like old money and low class thinking. I mean, it was a bad combination. And you could not be, you couldn't be gay, you know, you couldn't be black or brown, you couldn't be Jewish.
Wow.
You know, you had to fit in or you know, you had to be a football player. And I just rejected that from day one. And, you know, I've been fighting these kinds of people ever since. But, you know, instead of fighting with my fists, I've used music, I've used protest, I've used lobbying, I've used all kinds of things that I think have, you know, contributed more to society than just adding more violence to an already violent place.
Westport was definitely on the more tolerant side of that area, I think. It's a pretty Democratic Party heavy district, you know, still all the ignorance and lack of understanding of white liberals, which, you know, I have to overcome too.
Yeah, I mean, we know now, even if we didn't know when we were kids, that just because you have a big D next to your name doesn't mean you know what the hell you're talking about, doesn't mean you actually care, doesn't mean you're willing to, you know, like lessen some of your privilege to benefit other people.
Yeah, like really challenge, you know, the system.
Yeah, there are very few, there may be some Democrats where we grew up, but I don't know how many radicals or progressives there are.
Yeah.
And that's what we really need.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, thanks for coming on. Thanks for reaching out. Really appreciate
absolutely,
you coming
man.
On the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. All right,
I
good to meet you.
Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
All right, man, you too.
There it is. Thanks for tuning in to my talk with Awkward. Please read up on 10 for Justice and get involved if you can. It's really important work, and it's something you can do for free right now. Check the description for all important links, and I'll see you next time. Keep fighting. What did it get you? Following all the rules. What did it get you? Worked your whole life to watch your children suffer too. What did it get you? You took what they gave you. What did it get you to get straight A's in fucking corporate wage slave school? Still believe the lies. Don't believe what's in front of your eyes. Don't cry to me when it dies. What did it get you? They said it was too soon. What did it?